Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
All right, Mike, my first question for you is, did we finally get reminded that SmackDown's premier match at WrestleMania is AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura? For once, it did not seem, at least at the end of the show, to take a back seat to the Daniel Bryan situation, which certainly was justified last week, and the whole saga with KO and Sammy. We actually got a semi-significant angle between them at the end of the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think we did. I think for the past several months, really, the focus of SmackDown has been the situation with Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. But tonight, I do think that they added some special focus to the WWE Championship match between Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles. And I thought it really got some of the most interesting and important developments that we've gotten in that feud since Shinsuke Nakamura won the Royal Rumble. They had to kind of take their time with it to some degree because AJ Styles still had a title defense at a pay-per-view leading up to WrestleMania. But I think now we kind of have an idea of where these guys are in terms of their character, in terms of how they feel about each other. And I think that kind of weaving that throughout the show and then ending it the way that they did, I think that now we kind of see the dynamic between them. And I think that, you know, they did a pretty good job with it. I think that there's still improvements that can be made in the 1 week until WrestleMania. But in terms of what we gotten before that, I think that they did a really good job with it. And I think that they're building more excitement for this match than they have at any other point since Nakamura won the Rumble.
Yeah, I don't really have a criticism of what they did tonight. The angle at the end where Shinsuke saved AJ from a post-match attack by Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable, and then had AJ, after he cleared the ring of the two heels, in position for the Kinshasa kick, and then charged at him and stopped short, and then just started petting him on the head. And earlier in their promo, telling AJ, the reason that I'm going to win is you're too emotional. When AJ got all fired up talking about their match being a dream match, but he's going to prove that this is the house that AJ built and he's phenomenal. I thought they did more to establish Shinsuke's persona than they've done to date. The announcers driving it home at the end, Corey Graves saying that this was, you know, psychological warfare, and Tom Phillips saying it was mind games taken to the next level. I might have inverted who said which there. But the idea being that, yeah, Shinsuke is a big name, and AJ's establishing that, and AJ's the hothead, and Shinsuke is the guy using psychological games to try to get in AJ's head. I think that's something that they can build on. I kind of wish we got this a couple weeks ago, and then there was a little bit more of that going on, and instead we just had Shinsuke saying, I'm going to, you know, give you a knee to the face to win. But I was glad they expanded on it. The one thing missing for me still at this point is Shinsuke declaring why he wants to win the title. I mean, like, we get AJ's side of it. We're going to tear the house down. It's going to be a clinic, and I'm going to prove I'm the best. I want to know, I want to hear from Shinsuke next week. I wanted to hear by now, but next week is our last chance. Why does he want to be champion? Does he want to be champion? What does it mean to him to be champion? And we just haven't heard that yet. That's what I'm hoping we get in the final chapter of the hype for their match.
Yeah, I think that they've rightly, for the most part, limited him on the mic in terms of what they've asked out of him until now. Whereas on tonight's show on SmackDown, he said a lot more than he said during the entire build. And I think that he did a good job with it. And I think that overall, they did a good job of establishing more things. Like, I think that they could still stand to show everybody this aspect of danger that Shinsuke Nakamura has that they've not really expanded upon during his time, his entire time in WWE. Really, they've kind of just focused on the fact that he's, you know, he's unique and he has this way about him and he's the artist, and that they really like to pound that home. And I think they did that a little bit more tonight, but they did it in a better way than they have with Shinsuke kind of showing, you know, AJ, like, I could have taken you out if I wanted to. And he's just kind of inside his head. And it's a good way to do this face versus face feud, because a lot of times, you know, it's difficult to book something like that. But I think the way that they've done it, they've done a good job with it. But I do agree. I think that, you know, we do know what AJ Styles' whole thing has been throughout this entire time, why he wants to face Shinsuke Nakamura. He wants to, and he said it again tonight, I want to prove that I am the best in the world. You're the second best right now, and I'm going to show you why I'm better than you. Shinsuke, you're right. There really is no reason necessarily other than, you know, it's the WWE title, so I guess I want it. So that's pretty much what we're left to our own devices to figure out why he wants to do it. But I do think that more so than any point in this feud, we kind of at least have an idea of where these guys' heads are at. And I think that's at least an improvement, because I think that in terms of a lot of the feuds for WrestleMania, this was one of the ones that was kind of lagging behind and lacking in a lot of areas.
We got a lot more to talk about on today's show, but let's set the table. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, joined by Mike Chiari from Ring Rust Radio. And we'll be talking to him later on the show about a WrestleMania event that he and his cohorts at Ring Rust Radio have coming up in New Orleans on WrestleMania weekend. We are live on the air taking calls, and we will begin taking calls momentarily. If you are listening to us, either streaming the show or have called in but want to participate in the show, the number to call, first of all, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And then you have to push 1 on your keypad to move from the background into the caller standby queue. So if you are interested in participating in the show, push 1 on your Touchstone phone. One other brief subject, Mike, and then later on we're going to talk to an on-site correspondent, and also got a lot of emails on a variety of topics from tonight's program. And if you're listening to us live and can call in and want to add to the mailbag for later in the show, that email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Yesterday we covered Raw, so I hope that you have a chance to check that show out. Jason from Australia was my guest co-host, and we broke down a show with a number of developments for WrestleMania, including John Cena once again calling out Undertaker and not getting a response yet again. So you can get a breakdown of that. Also hear from our on-site correspondent. If you download or stream yesterday's program. Now, later this week on the Thursday flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, and that's part of our separate feed, the blue logo feed at Podcast One, I'll be joined by Todd Martin, PW Torch VIP audio analyst. We'll talk not just WrestleMania developments, but also we'll talk about the New Japan event Sunday night that aired live on Access TV from Long Beach, California. It should be a good discussion on a hell of a main event with the Young Bucks. And in that main event with the Golden Lovers. And then our fourth show of the week, also on our blue brand at Podcast One, will be Interview Friday with Sam Roberts, part 3 of 3, as we do our final stretch of rebooking WrestleManias in terms of which match should have gone on last. Did WWE make the right choice? We've had great download numbers for the first 2 installments, the last 2 Fridays, and we cover the last batch of WrestleManias and decide, did WWE at the time and in retrospect put the right match on last? And Sam and I will also talk about this year's WrestleMania and all the different options for a match that could go on last. And Mike, tonight on SmackDown, another big match got officially booked, although it's a question mark whether it will take place. Daniel Bryan coming out and announcing that Shane McMahon, that he wanted to team with Shane McMahon against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Major stipulations in the match: if KO and Sami win, they get their jobs back. If KO and Sami lose, they remain fired or are fired again, however you want to look at it. But the caveat being Shane McMahon hospitalized with some legit issues, a hernia and diverticulitis. He is battling a massive infection on heavy antibiotics, according to WWE.com. That is not an angle, from our understanding. That is not storyline. They did say he was discharged from the hospital today. Tom Phillips said that, and they would keep us up to date on his condition through next week. So if that match happens, and it seems doubtful to me that Shane would be medically cleared, or that it would be responsible to medically clear him based on everything that I've read, but I'm not a doctor, so you got to trust the doctors on this one. But if that is a match at WrestleMania, Mike, does that get any consideration at all to go on last when you consider it's a McMahon and there's a major stipulation? And oh yeah, it's Daniel Bryan's first match back after a couple years away almost.
Yeah, well, you know, firstly, I think it's the match that last week when the developments with Daniel Bryan happened, it's the match we kind of all expected. But then, as you mentioned, WWE comes out and says Shane has diverticulitis, and, you know, that's no joke. I think everybody knows what that did, how that impacted Brock Lesnar, and what a physical beast Brock Lesnar is. And now you have a guy like Shane McMahon going through that. And so for me, I was kind of surprised that they announced it on the show this week. Obviously, you know, card subject to change and probably playing it by ear in terms of, you know, what his status is for WrestleMania. But I was mostly expecting going into the night that they would maybe announce a contingency plan of some kind in terms of somebody, or say, you know, we don't really know who his partner is going to be. We'll find out at WrestleMania. And then, you know, they do whatever they do. If Shane can go, then he shows up. If it's somebody else, then, you know, that's kind of where they're at. But I was surprised that they said that considering Shane's status. But with that said, you know, Shane McMahon, by all accounts, is kind of insane. And I mean that in a good way in terms of what he's willing to do from a wrestling perspective. So I guess a normal person, it would shock me if they were ready. But somebody like Shane McMahon, it wouldn't shock me if he's able to somehow pull it off and wrestle at WrestleMania. But with regard to your question about if it's going to go on last, I think that there are arguments to be made for it to go on last. Primarily because it's Daniel Bryan's return match, and it's going to be a huge moment, especially in New Orleans, because of what happened at WrestleMania 30 with him in New Orleans. But I've been of the mind pretty much the entire time that they're building toward WrestleMania that Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar is probably what they want to go with for the main event. It could be, potentially, Brock's last match in WWE. It will be, most likely, a crowning achievement for Roman Reigns winning the Universal Championship. Again, it does have a major title on the line, and I think it's probably been the best-booked storyline leading up to WrestleMania as well. So I think that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar are so much going for it, and it has the star power, and it has seemingly everything that a Vince McMahon in WWE as a whole would look for in a main event, that I think it's going to be hard pressed to knock that off its perch. And I also think that like a match like Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon might get more consideration. So I think that there are a few matches ahead of this match that they would probably go with as a true main event for the show.
I agree with you. I think it's a long shot. It just depends on match order, the finishes, and who Daniel Bryan's surprise partner is, if it turns out not to be Shane McMahon. Any ideas, if you're in a brainstorming session, and it turns, you know, I mean, they put so much hype into this match. I'm not surprised mm-hmm. they announced it, even if they know full well that Shane physically, I mean, a hernia takes time to recover. There's talk of, you know, in this situation, sometimes surgery is needed after the diverticulitis is cleared up. From what I read, it just sounds like it's not. It would, again, I don't know Shane, the details of Shane's condition. I know exactly what WWE.com released, but those are two conditions mm-hmm. paired up that it just sounds like it would be a really bad idea to put him out there in a physical situation again, unless he was very limited in what he did, which is not typical of Shane McMahon. So I don't blame them for announcing the match and just wanting to at least say that's on the lineup. But if Shane can't go, anybody come to mind? I was thinking Rusev, you know, fans love him, you know, and so, I mean, there's not really a connection in any other way, but they would have 2 weeks of TV to make it work. But now he's been added to the U.S. title match tonight with Jinder Rude and Orton. So that took him off the table. I'm not sure I have any other A-listers who come to mind. Anybody jump out to you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as soon as I heard the thing with Shane, the fantasy booking juices kind of got going, and I was trying to run through my mind who it could potentially be. And I think that if you're looking for one choice that I thought was, you know, potentially maybe a Dolph Ziggler, because he did have an interaction with Daniel Bryan last week, doesn't really have much going for WrestleMania, other than it looked like they're building him to be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal tonight. But if you want to go outside the box, I think that you could look at maybe Kane. He doesn't really have anything going. There would be plot holes aplenty, because I think the last time he interacted with Daniel Bryan, he chokeslammed him. So I think that would be something. But obviously they have a history with Team Hell No. And then I think you have question marks like, if certain wrestlers would be ready to come back from injury, maybe a Samoa Joe, because he has that kind of indie wrestling history with the likes of Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Maybe a guy like Dean Ambrose, you could say the same about him. I don't really know for sure what their statuses are. I think that I've heard that Samoa Joe might be on the verge of returning. I haven't heard really anything on Dean Ambrose, but I think that you have a few potential options that could still make it a great match, even if Shane McMahon can't go.
No, those are good suggestions. Big casts. Would have zero connection to anybody in that match, but it, you know, if he were available, and that might be a way to reintroduce him to the mix. But, you know, why would Daniel Bryan trust him to be his partner? I mean, it's just that seems like lower on the list than anybody that you mentioned. So, well, we got all week to speculate, and I mean, I hope Shane's condition improves so much that that in a safe decision can be made for him to wrestle as planned. But I also don't want him to wrestle if it's not safe, just because he's a McMahon, damn it. So Hopefully that doesn't happen. All right, let's take some calls and begin with area code 814. 814, thanks for calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey guys, how you doing? This is Tim from Erie, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Tim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, not too much. You know, I don't get to watch the show that much because I got two young kids at home and I'm usually in bed by 10, but I'm on the road tonight, so I caught the whole show, and I thought it was a good show, and I really did like the segments with AJ and Shinsuke, and I think the build is getting better for that match. But with that said, do you think this leads you to believe that where this might actually land on the card now? Because I have a feeling it's going to be the first match on the main card, even though I'd love to see it close the show. I'm just getting the feeling that it's going to open the show. What are your thoughts on that?
I can't decide what I think will open the show. I mean, I think it's all but like three or four matches. Well, I say all but three or four. All but maybe three matches could open the show. Because opening the main card is a spot of some prestige. You know, the kickoff show is over. That's considered the true prelims. And starting off the show, it won't surprise me if it isn't the triple threat tag team title match for SmackDown. It won't surprise me if it's a U.S. title match. Wouldn't shock me if it's the Miz Intercontinental title match. Get some good action in there, and Balor and Seth pop the crowd. I don't think they would put the matches I would eliminate from being the openers would be Charlotte, Asuka. And Charlotte, from what I understand, just had some dental surgery that took her off of house shows and took her out of action tonight. Hopefully, it's no big deal. The timing isn't great on whatever happened coming up, but it sounds like she'll has much better chance to be ready than Shane McMahon. So I think the mixed tag with Ronda won't go on last, or Reigns Lesnar has almost zero chance to go on last, and Undertaker Cena has almost zero chance to go on last. Other than that, Mike, I'm not sure I'd rule anything out, but I would consider it doubtful, but not impossible to imagine, depending on what happens with Shane, this match kicking off the show. I don't think it's a slight to go on first. I mean, obviously it would be for the matches I just mentioned, but for Brian, Sammy, KO, and maybe Shane, would that be considered a demotion? Or I don't know if demotion's a word, but a slight? Or would that be an honor to be deemed the official kickoff match for the show? Well, kickoff's the wrong term to use. The official opener of the main card.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say that it's completely impossible that AJ and Shinsuke would go on first, but because it has happened before, a world title match, I think the most recent one that comes to mind was Del Rio and Edge. That went on first, but it seems like they've kind of shied away from that. Like last year, they had two world title matches, and they both went on later in the show. Orton against Wyatt and Brock against Goldberg. So I would say that they're probably more likely to go later in the show, both of them, because it's such a long card that you have enough of a buffer to put between them at any spot in the card that I don't know that you necessarily have to have one of them go on first. So I would be surprised if it went on first. It would be a great way, obviously, to get the crowd into it, but I think they want to save that for a little bit later. I would say it has almost no chance of being the closing match because, like I said before, I think that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar pretty much have that locked down, probably. I could see Daniel Bryan going on first because of the pop that you'd get for his theme music just right off the start, and I could also see maybe the likely triple threat SmackDown tag team championship match, and you could have New Day come out first, kind of like how they opened up WrestleMania last year as the host. So I think for me, Daniel Bryan's match and the SmackDown tag team match are the two likeliest candidates to go on first. I would be very surprised if Shinsuke and AJ open the show.
All right, let's go. By the way, Tim, thanks for your call. I hope you enjoyed watching SmackDown for once. There's a lot of ways you can support what we do here at the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. One of them is to give us a 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts. If you have iTunes on your computer or Apple Podcasts, just search Wade Keller. And when the red logo and our blue logo from Podcast One show up, if you can take a moment and give us a 5-star rating, that's awesome. That really does help. It sends a message to other potential listeners. This is a show that you're endorsing. And it also sends a little message to Apple that our listeners like what we're doing. And it certainly can help in their algorithm of what shows that they feature and promote. We continue to be the number one current events-based pro wrestling podcast out there. Our Raw show yesterday showing up as the number one current events-based show earlier today, Tuesday, in the Apple Podcast rankings. So thank you, everybody, for that. And I sincerely appreciate your support and continuing to download the show and spread the word about our program. Not only the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows following Raw and SmackDown, but also, of course, our podcast one shows later in the week, our Thursday flagship covering a wide array of topics in the pro wrestling industry, and Interview Friday. And again, Sam Roberts joins me for part three. Don't miss this one as we look at the match order for the final half dozen or so WrestleManias leading up to this year's. And we also analyze the match order for this year's event. Another way you can support us is when you shop Amazon. When you're about to go to Amazon.com, think of the message that I'm about to give, which is all you have to do is go to pwtorch.com/Amazon instead. And when you do that, a big Amazon logo shows up on the screen. You just click on that. It takes you right to the page you were going to anyway. But taking that slight detour through our website gives us a commission, magically almost, on everything that you buy in that shopping trip. And it's a cool deal. Amazon just rewards us for mentioning them on this show by giving us a commission for those who take action and shop with them. But for it to work out for us and not just be free advertising for Amazon, you've got to start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. And if everybody out there, and I know many of you shop at Amazon, if all of you started doing that, it would make a huge difference for us. I mean, it really would. We hit refresh every morning on those who are doing it, and we appreciate those of you who already are. And I really encourage and hope that those of you who are not yet will give some consideration to it next time that you're about to shop at Amazon. And of course, the other way you can show support for us, the best way, is to become a VIP member. And we give you a lot in return for that VIP membership, including ads and plugs removed from the four Wade Keller podcasts during the week. The post shows here early in the week and the podcast one shows late in the week. Plus, all seven live casts have the ads and plugs removed. Plus, that's just the beginning of the podcasts that we offer during the week. There's many VIP exclusive shows that I either record solo every day or co-host with Bruce Mitchell, Todd Martin, and post-pay-per-view shows. And there's many other shows, along with an unmatched library of podcasts and retro radio shows going back to the 1990s, early 90s, and the Attitude Era, plus ad-free access to our website, mobile and desktop, and the new newsletter each week, and over 1,500 back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Go find out more information at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip for as little as $8.25 a month on average. You get everything I just mentioned and more. Go find out the full list of details, read some testimonials, or just go sign up. The form link is available along with details at pwtorch.com/govip. It's a great time of year to go VIP. Go VIP in time for the last week or so of WrestleMania hype, and I think you'll be addicted and stick around for, hopefully, as long as you're a wrestling fan, because I've been doing this over 30 years and I don't plan to stop. And I would love for you, all of you, to be part of all of our coverage, our immersive coverage, not just of WWE, but also New Japan, ROH, NXT, wrestling history, the independent scene, the Europe indie scene, and more. There's a podcast for you that will be your favorite that maybe you don't have access to right now, whether it's The Fix with Todd Martin or Alan Forel's Pro Wrest Paradise or Sean Radican Worldwide, or Pat McNeil and Jim Valley doing their Wayback Playback, or the Retro Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows. I could go on and on. The East Coast Gas VIP show and so much more. pwtorch.com/govip. All right, we're back and we'll continue with phone calls. Area code 803 next, and then 251, you're on deck. 803, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Yes, this is Joseph from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, Joseph, what's on your mind tonight?
I really like the direction that they're going with Rusev now that he's actually got a good win and that they're putting him in a fatal four-way. I was just wondering what you guys thought the odds were of him actually winning the title and getting a good push after WrestleMania.
What do you think, Mike?
I think that it's certainly possible. He wouldn't be my first choice to win the. I mean, not in terms of personal preference, but I think that he probably isn't WWE's first choice necessarily, because I think that if they wanted him to be champion so badly, he had U.S. title matches while this whole Rusev Day thing was hot, and it still is, but he's had opportunities and they had him lose these matches. I think that it's good on WWE's part that they're recognizing that he's very over right now, and that it's probably better to have him involved in an actual, you know, match for a title at WrestleMania rather than just throwing him in the Battle Royal like they seem to do with anybody that they don't really know, you know, what to do with them. So I think, if nothing else, that's a positive development. For me personally, though, I think that it probably makes the most sense for a guy like Jinder Mahal to win the championship if they want him to still be a relevant person on SmackDown. Because, again, you know, based on what his character is, I think it would make a lot of sense for him to be the United States champion. He can get a lot of heel heat with that. Right now, I think that he's kind of lacking. I think that of anybody that is in that match, he's the one that needs the championship. Orton obviously doesn't need it. I think Bobby Roode's hamstrung by it a little bit when he has it. And Rusev's had it before, and it made more sense when he had it in the past because it fit his gimmick. So I think in terms of just who it fits most, it's Jinder Mahal for me. And I think that Rusev probably would honestly be better off not having it and just being in a different position on the card, because a lot of times the United States Championship can be an albatross and it can hold guys back more than it elevates them.
I would not be against a double turn with Rusev and Bobby Roode. I thought Bobby Roode is a little temperamental. You know, Randy Orton yanks Samil off the ring apron and Roode has a conniption over it. I mean, it was the dumbest thing. I honestly can't imagine anything less worthy of being upset about in the world than Roode. It just felt like a moment that made me like his character less. And it just seems like he's going to be better off as a heel anyway. There's nothing to him as a babyface. I mean, glorious. That's it. It's just after 3 weeks. Okay, what's next? Nothing. Nothing's come up next. I think he's better off as a heel. And the fans want Rusev as a babyface. I thought Rusev playing off Jinder backstage showed that babyface personality, the way he just sort of rolled his eyes and shrugged at Jinder, inviting him to the WrestleMania party when he wins the U.S. title. And, hey, you can go to WrestleMania. You can be my guest. And it was very condescending, and or I guess patronizing, a bit more precise word there. And Rusev saying, no, I want in on the match. That was a babyface move. The only downside here, and this is where I think a Roode turn would be good, is you've got Jinder as essentially the only heel against three babyfaces now at WrestleMania, which is not the ideal situation, because now you kind of got sympathy for Jinder no matter what he does. There's that they have to battle the idea that he's against three people who all don't like him. Now, WWE would defend the booking and say, hey, wait a second, Rusev's officially still a heel. Aiden English is helping Rusev, and there's heat there. And Roode and Orton certainly aren't getting along, so they're not going to work together. So it is every man for himself. That said, I see this as fertile ground for a rare but, I think, effective and opportune double turn opportunity.
I agree, actually. I think that you're 100% right with Bobby Roode, because I've said it since he came up. His heel work in NXT was fantastic. It was probably the best work of his entire career. And then he gets called up, and they kind of took away everything that made him so good in NXT. And that's unfortunate, because he really was at the top of his game. And then with Rusev, the fans do cheer him. He essentially is a face, even if he's not in name a face. So I think that does make sense. I think there's no question about it. I think they both would be better positioned moving forward in those roles, regardless of whether it happens at WrestleMania or not, a true double turn. I think that that's where they both have to go if you want them to both be successful ultimately.
All right, let's go next. Thanks, Joseph, for the call. Appreciate it. We'll go to 251, and then 615, excuse me, is on deck. 251, please go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Kenny from Mobile, Alabama.
Hey, Kenny, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, so they said, the commentary said, talked about the Battle Royal and how it can elevate a wrestler's career, but think about it, Mojo won, you know, I think it was last year, and he's still in the same spot he was, if not worse. So when they showed Dolph in the trophy, I think they were kind of hitting that Dolph had actually a chance to win the Battle Royal. I wanted to get your guys' pick on who do you think, you know, deserves to win that Battle Royal, the men and women's, or who you think is going to win. And that's all I got for you guys.
Thanks, Kenny. Yeah, they did officially say that Fandango, Tyler Breeze, and Dolph Ziggler are entered in the Battle Royal. With the type of year Dolph Ziggler has had, it seems like that would be, and the type of TV time they've invested in him, it'd give him something else to talk about. And so I'm kind of in favor of Ziggler winning the Battle Royal. He's so talented and so terribly booked, and his character could use something else, and that would give his character something else. Nobody else jumps out at me who's been officially announced for the match yet. I agree that saying the match is a boost to a career it feels empty. It doesn't feel like they've actually followed up on that, so I'd like it to actually be a momentum generator this year. If Ziggler won and then went on to have momentum from that, then it would actually add some prestige to the Andre Battle Royal. So that's my thoughts on that. Mike, your thoughts on both the men's and the women's Battle Royal opportunities.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone deserves to win the Andre the Battle Royal. I don't. I wouldn't put that evil on anybody, but I think they do have good intentions with it, because when it has been like a guy like Mojo Rawley, a guy like Baron Corbin, Cesaro winning it, right after they win it, it seems like they try to do something with these guys, but ultimately over the course of a year, they kind of just move on to the next thing and move on to what they already know. And that's kind of like the WWE way sometimes. Talking about the men's battle royal, in terms of who already has been announced, I don't really see anybody necessarily where it'd be a huge boost or it'd be, you know, necessarily great for them. I kind of see potentially Big Cass winning that. He hasn't been announced. We don't know for sure that he'll be there for WrestleMania to compete, at least. But, you know, reports are out there that he is ready to go. He's telling people that he's ready to go. And I think that would make sense. He's a big guy, obviously, billed as 7 feet tall. They were building him in a big way prior to his injury. And I think that him coming back would probably get a babyface reaction, even though he was a heel when he got injured. And I think that you could kind of build on that momentum, maybe take him back to the gimmick that he had when it was him and Enzo, because Enzo's not in the picture anymore and he's not really taking up that gimmick, and just roll with that and see how he does as a singles face with that gimmick. And I think that winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal could be a good launching pad for that. Again, it hasn't really worked out like that for guys in the past, but I think a big injury return, a surprise, and a win for Big Cass, I think that could be effective.
I agree. I think that's a good option, too. How about on the women's side? Anybody jump out as a favorite? Obviously, Sasha Banks and Bayley are two of the bigger names in that match, and I don't think, unlike the men's Andre the Giant Battle Royal, I don't think it's seen as a consolation prize, as much of a consolation prize to be in it, because it is the first one that will likely be an annual tradition, and there are fewer spots for the women on the main card, but there's a lot of women. So there's going to be some bigger names in the women's battle royal than in the men's battle royal. So Sasha and Bayley being in there, they probably were hoping for at one point, having a grudge match and a showcase match at Mania. I think it's kind of better for them to be in the battle royal than lost on a kickoff show or having their match cut really short on time because the show's running long and Triple H needs his full 45 minutes or, you know, whatever happens that would diminish their potential. I'd rather have them have their showcase match when it can have the time and the spotlight it deserves. I expect a big angle with Bayley and Sasha in the battle royal to further their breakup, assuming they end up going that direction. But I don't necessarily think that means either of them win, although it could come down to those two. Is there anybody who jumps out to you, Mike, from the women who are not in matches, even if they're not officially announced for the Women's Battle Royal yet, who might be a good choice to win, who would get a boost along the lines of a Ziggler or Big Cass?
Yeah, I do feel like the Women's Battle Royal definitely feels more important and more prestigious than the Men's Battle Royal, because it is the first of its kind, because, you know, you've never seen a showcase like that for the women at WrestleMania necessarily. So I think that it would be more likely to do something for the person that wins it than maybe the Andre Battle Royal would. Obviously, I agree, Sasha and Bayley are definitely top options because of their star power. I think Becky Lynch is definitely a big-time option. I would really like to see a situation where the winner gets a title shot or something like that, something to make it feel like it, you know, instead of just kind of a nondescript trophy that really doesn't do anything per se, say that the winner gets a title shot on their brand. And I think that you would add even more of an importance to the battle royal. For me personally, I think my pick right now probably is Becky Lynch, because I could see it being a situation where Asuka wins the SmackDown Women's title, and then maybe Becky, because she won, she could, you know, say, like, you know, I'm going to be your next opponent because I won this Battle Royal and I deserve it, or however you want to do it. So I could see that being a good option. But if you're looking for maybe somebody to get that boost, you're going to have NXT women in the Battle Royal. They've said all three brands are going to be represented. And if you have a plan to call somebody up immediately after WrestleMania, then that could be a great way to do it. I could see maybe Ember Moon, if she loses the NXT Women's Championship to Shayna Baszler, and NXT TakeOver being a really good option, because then you have her winning the Battle Royal, and immediately she has some credibility going to the main roster. So if it's not an established person like a Becky Lynch or a Sasha or a Bayley, I think Ember Moon might be the best option.
I think they wouldn't want to replicate the Royal Rumble stipulation by giving a title shot automatically to the winner. That's the only thing that kind of came to mind when you said that. So I thought, even though it makes absolutely no sense, and I'm not even 20% serious, have the winner of the Women's Royal Rumble get to decide, or in the Women's Battle Royal at WrestleMania, get to decide a new GM for either Raw or SmackDown. It's completely unrelated to anything, but it would sure be convenient this year, now that Daniel Bryan is throwing down his blazer and doesn't want any more paperwork. Any ideas on that front, Mike, in terms of who is a candidate, a dark horse, or obvious to replace Daniel Bryan, if they go that route? Now, if Shane is physically unable to wrestle, he might just remain the authority figure, and they don't need to replace Daniel Bryan. It was a little redundant anyway. But if they do choose to go that route, since Shane did take a leave of absence from the position, anybody come to mind? I know, you know, some people speculated Hulk Hogan. I don't see that happening. But how about you?
You know, I honestly haven't really thought about it that much, but because for me personally, I'm kind of over the whole general manager thing. It's kind of played out to me. I understand why they do it in certain situations, especially after the draft that they had to have general managers, to have commissioners. I understand that power structure. But if they do decide to replace him, I mean, I can almost see it being a situation where, you know, Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle beat Stephanie McMahon and Triple H at WrestleMania. So maybe they fire Kurt Angle and then maybe he goes to SmackDown. He's the GM. And then maybe you have kind of a power structure on Raw that's Stephanie McMahon and Triple H running the show. And then Kurt Angle kind of resurfaces on SmackDown. I could see something like that. But in terms of, you know, people already, I guess you could maybe call up William Regal and put him in the authority role on SmackDown because he's been in that in NXT, but I think that he's valuable in his role there and doing talent scouting and stuff like that. So the only thing that really immediately jumps to mind is maybe a switch for Kurt Angle, because you'll have the superstar shakeup. He has this issue on Raw already with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, so I could potentially see something like that happening.
And also, I think it would be, there'd be an option, and this isn't meant to be related to the Women's Battle Royal, even though it might seem like it is, but to have a woman GM of SmackDown. Mm-hmm. They did that with Vicky Guerrero, but you know, part of WWE's goal of looking like they are just forwarding the women's movement in every way possible with the Women's Battle Royal and the Rumble and everything else, you know, finding, you know, a Lita or somebody who is willing to go on the road, who's a big enough name and be that presence. By the way, I'm with you. I mean, I would be happy if the GM is, you know, Lance Storm, who sends texts only, you know, you know, keep them off the air.
Oh, wait, they kind of tried that with a computer, so maybe not, true. But yeah.
That's true, yeah. There's a joke in there somewhere, but I don't know what it is. So, yeah, but I'm with you. Yeah, the GM doesn't have to be a big star. It just should be somebody to make a decision now and then, and Tom Phillips can do what he did today, which is say what the GM decided to do without the GM having to stand in the middle of the ring and make a big production of it. All right, 615, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, wait, Mike, this is Kenny from Tennessee.
Hey, Kenny from Tennessee. We got two Kennys in a row. What's on your mind tonight, Kenny?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I want to talk a little bit, you're just mentioning the superstar shakeup a bit. What do you think is the possibility that we might see a scenario where we see maybe the Cruiserweight division move from Raw to SmackDown as far as main TV show where they would be? Do you think it'd be possible for that to happen on a 2-hour SmackDown, or do you think they're just better off keeping the division on Raw like it is and just try to build it up from the ground up, so to speak?
Interesting. First of all, it'd be totally like WWE to just have a draft where the Cruiserweights as an entity switch brands, you know, they're not individual stars. It's a thing. It's like TNA and the X division.
Favorite kind of draft where you can just draft like a whole offensive line. It's the best.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them to do it. I understand why they wanted to put it on Raw, because Raw's a 3-hour show. And so the Cruiserweights help fill that time. And it also puts the Cruiserweights in front of a larger audience when they're trying to promote the network in 205 Live. That said, certainly from a continuity standpoint, having Cruiserweights on SmackDown, not every week, once every 2 or 3 or 4 weeks even, and using that as a way to promote 205 Live, which starts right after SmackDown, is probably, from a synergy standpoint, better, even if ultimately they reach fewer fans. And then you don't have the downside of having a match on Raw that people aren't all that interested in. Of course, now that match moves to SmackDown, and that should be fixable no matter what brand they're on, by trying to make the stars that they feature more of a ratings draw than a ratings and viewership turnoff, where fans are just taking bathroom and concession stand breaks when the match starts. But I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but I'm not sure that, I mean, there's times where SmackDown, it seems like, yeah, could really use a Cruiserweight match, but at the same time, it has been perceived as a B show, and I don't think it would help, Mike, to have the C show, which is what 205 is looked at as, now filling one segment every week or two.
Yeah, I honestly don't think the cruiserweights are even going to factor into the situation for the simple fact that I don't know that they'll be featured on Raw or SmackDown at all in the near future, because really they have gone largely away from it on Raw. They did have a cruiserweight tag team match on Raw with Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali to kind of give a little bit of build on their A show for the Cruiserweight Championship match at WrestleMania. But by and large, before that, I think it had been at least a few weeks since they had had Cruiserweights on Raw at all, and really had just confined them to 205 Live. And to be honest, I could see them going in that direction moving forward, because you're going to have call-ups from NXT, so you're going to have an even larger roster on Raw, an even larger roster on SmackDown. So unless you bring in a huge name to be part of that Cruiserweight division, like maybe a Rey Mysterio, I think they're just going to have Cruiserweights only on 205 Live, except for maybe a very rare occasion. And if they do, I think that they would probably just still be on Raw, because you have that extra hour. Maybe you have a few minutes to fill once in a while, and you're not going to have that kind of time on SmackDown. I think logistically it would make more sense for them to be part of SmackDown at times, because again, 205 Live is after SmackDown. But I think that in terms of what you have in terms of roster size and time, I just don't think that they'll do anything with them. And I think largely it's just going to be Cruiserweights on 205 Live moving forward, just based on what they've been doing lately.
All right, Mike, before we cut away and talk to our on-site correspondent, I would like to hear from you about your show and also what you've got planned WrestleMania weekend that I know you and the crew are excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. Ring Rust Radio, it drops every Wednesday night, and you can find that at blogtalkradio.com. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Just breaking down WWE and really every other major wrestling company, all the latest reports, digging into that, doing interviews with, you know, big names in the business. And what we're going to be doing in New Orleans, WrestleMania weekend, it's going to be our second annual live show. It's going to be Saturday, April 7th, from 2 to 4 p.m. local time at the Hilton Garden in New Orleans Convention Center. It's going to be a lot of fun. We had a great time last year. We had an awesome turnout. We're expecting that again this year. It's really going to be an interactive experience, a lot like just how our podcast is, that you listen to it every week. A lot of joking around, a lot of fun, delving deep into wrestling topics, just a lot of back and forth, a lot of just kind of making fun of each other in a lighthearted way, in a fun way, and just sharing our love for wrestling overall. And if you're interested in attending that, you can just email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com. You can contact us on Twitter at ringrustradio, ask us about that. $10 a ticket. And again, it's going to be Saturday, April 7th, 2 to 4 p.m. local time. So you'll have plenty of time if you're planning on going to any shows later, like NXT, TakeOver New Orleans, to get to that.
Mike, sounds like a lot of fun. Hope people took notes on that or inquire about the event, because it looks like something would be a fun part of the weekend. All right, we've got to cut to a break and get to our on-site correspondent, who is standing by from Pittsburgh with notes on what it was like to be in the building. And then we've got a lot of good emails from our in our inbox for the mailbag segment coming up later in the program. If you're listening live and we didn't get to your call and you want to send us your topic for the mailbag discussion, that email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you have questions for the flagship edition of the show this week, send it in sometime before late Wednesday afternoon. And that email address is the same, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Don't forget, search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to pro wrestling podcasts to subscribe to both our blue feed and our red feed. We have our brand split. You're listening to the red feed for our Monday and Tuesday post shows. And then our blue feed, our blue logo, are the podcast one shows, our Thursday flagship and Interview Friday. And that'll feature Todd Martin and Sam Roberts, respectively, this week. Some good shows coming up, so be sure you are downloading those also later this week. We'll be back right after this message with our on-site correspondent. All right, we're now joined by our on-site correspondent from Pittsburgh, Joe. Mike Chiari is still with me here. Joe, welcome to the Wade Keller Post Show. Appreciate you taking time to talk to us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Very, very good. You're welcome. Well, let's talk about tonight's show. First of all, what was the attendance like for SmackDown tonight?
Sure. Well, I was in the section facing the hard camera, and it looked I had attended the Raw here in July of last year, and it looked like they used pretty much the same setup that they did when I attended that show. So the floor section was full and the lower bowl was full. They did tarp off a pretty good chunk of the upper deck directly behind the hard camera. So, yeah, I'm facing, you know, the hard camera. And then, like, where the WrestleMania sign is on the other end, that set, you know, a little bit past that, the WrestleMania sign was all tarped off. But it did look like there were people in the upper deck behind where I was sitting. I couldn't really see it, but it did look like there were people up there. So, you know, I know that there have been pictures of SmackDown where, you know, the attendance has been really bad, but it didn't seem like this tonight. It looked like a pretty good crowd.
So floor full, lower bowl full, and scattered upper deck?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. All right. What was the reaction to Daniel Bryan tonight and his speech? We were, I know I was watching it and thinking his demeanor came across sort of solemn, and I know he's trying to sell his injuries, and then he got really fired up at the end. It seemed like the crowd was into it. How would you describe the kind of emotional ride that Bryan took the fans on, and how did you react to it?
Yeah, he definitely got a big reaction, and I kind of thought he would, just because if you remember the 2014 Royal Rumble and how irate everyone was when he didn't, you know, when he wasn't the 30th entrant. And but yeah, we really, you know, as soon as his music hit, everyone started chanting yes. And then when he threw off his jacket, and he gave that whole speech about how he didn't want to be in meetings and boardrooms, we just loved it, and I loved it. So yeah, he really had us.
Who can cheers a babyface cutting a promo on meetings?
Yeah.
So many people can relate to that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I guess anybody who cuts a promo about hating meetings, they're an instant babyface, aren't they?
I think I have an idea for a heel tag team, but that's another story. All right. The meetings. All right. Okay. I'm here all weekend. All right. Talk about who got the biggest star reactions of the night. I assume Daniel Bryan is at the top of that or very close to it. But how did that compare to, say, AJ? Shinsuke got his full ring entrance. The New Day often get really big pops. We didn't get to see Charlotte tonight. She is out with some dental surgery. But Becky Lynch often gets big pops. Certainly Randy Orton is often in the running. And then we have that X Factor, Rusev. Anybody kind of jump out as the top tier group in terms of crowd response tonight?
Wow, that's really hard to say, because a lot, you know, I would say maybe top three. Wow. Maybe Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, maybe Randy Orton, and then maybe Shinsuke. And I mean, Becky Lynch got a good pop too, but I would say that those four that I just mentioned, they really got the crowd.
All right, cool. Mike, do you have a question for Joe?
Yeah, obviously there was a lot of focus on the AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura feud tonight. They got to close the show, and they had a really interesting segment, I thought, after the match, with Shinsuke kind of teasing the Kinshasa to AJ Styles and not doing it. And then, you know, watching it on TV, it felt like there were kind of audible oohs and ahs from the crowd, and that the crowd was really into that. So from your perspective, how did you feel the crowd, the live crowd, felt about that entire segment and how it came across?
Yeah, I think I had the same reaction you did. You know, we were, you know, when Shinsuke was teasing he was going to do the Kinshasa on AJ, we were like, oh, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? And then when he pulled up and they patted AJ on the head, we were like, oh, okay, you got us. So, yeah. Yeah, the crowd, I don't know if they thought that Shinsuke was actually going to do it, or if they kind of knew that, you know, these guys are good friends, yeah, they're like, oh, okay, you got us. But yeah,
if the Pittsburgh crowd is any indication, and they might not be, how do you think the crowd will side in that match with AJ and Shinsuke? Just cheer for both of them, or do you think they kind of ended up, did you sense they were taking sides in rooting for one guy over the other?
rooting for either
Shinsuke or AJ when they face each other. Yeah, do you sense there'll be a favorite if the Pittsburgh crowd is indicative of the New Orleans crowd?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard to say how the New Orleans crowd react. Just speaking here in Pittsburgh, it seemed like the Pittsburgh crowd was cheering for both guys. I didn't really get the impression that they favored one guy over the other when Shinsuke came out and he did his usual entrance. People were singing along with his entrance. And when AJ came out, he got a huge pop. So it's hard to say. I think it was a pretty fair split, I'd say.
Very good. What kind of reaction did Dolph Ziggler get? We're hearing from other house show correspondents and people calling in to the show that, and our on-site correspondents here, that screeching noise happens and then he comes out and it's just like all this TV time led to nothing, that there just isn't really a passionate response pro or con for him at this point. Did that continue tonight, or did it seem like he was over and the crowd was either eager to boo him or popping for him?
No, that was definitely probably the weakest point of the night, was his match against Tyler Breeze. He came out and I saw it wasn't like the crowd wasn't a huge mass exodus like we've seen with the cruiserweight matches, but I did notice that some people were getting up to maybe go get popcorn or take a break. So no, Dolph didn't really get any sort of a reaction. I would say that match was I know that you sometimes ask if there was any point where they maybe lost the crowd. And I mean, that match was so brief and Dolph didn't really get a reaction. Yeah.
Were there Rusev Day chants either when Rusev was out or otherwise during the show? Cause that's sort of been a chant fans have gone to when they are not necessarily rejecting a match, but not all that engaged in a match. It would seem like Ziggler Breeze might've been an opportunity for some Rusev Day chants to break out. Did they pop up throughout the night?
I didn't hear them during that match, but as the people were filing in, there were some Rusev Day chants. When I was getting my food, actually, somebody wished me a happy Rusev Day. But that was very nice of them.
So nice.
Yeah. But no, it was mostly in the beginning or before the show went on the air when people, they give their woos and they're chanting Rusev Day. But I didn't really hear that at the expense of another match. It was when, during the opening tag match, but of course he was in it. So of course people are going to chant Rusev Day, but no, they didn't really chant it, to be mean to anybody else, just because they like Rusev, I guess.
I know that you had noted in an email that they had been advertising AJ and Shinsuke teaming up against KO and Sammy. And then that changed maybe just this week or within the last week to AJ and Shinsuke against Rusev and Aiden English. Did that match actually end up happening?
Yeah, it's interesting you mention that, because when it was towards the end of the night, they actually advertised an 8-man tag team match. It was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was going to be AJ, Shinsuke, and the Usos versus Rusev, Aiden English, and drawn a blank here. I'm sorry.
Legend Brothers?
But the Legend Brothers.
Benjamin and Gable?
Yes, Benjamin and Gable.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
It's had to be one of those two.
But then then that got changed because after 205 Live, I heard the ring announcer say the following 6-man tag team match. And I was like, wait a minute, they changed it again? Jeez, I mean, I know, I've heard of cards subject to change, but this is ridiculous. So the 6-man match, which I unfortunately didn't stay for, but I did hear the announcements. It was AJ and the Usos versus Baron Corbin, Rusev, and Aiden English.
Okay.
And I'm just gonna assume that the baby faces won, send the crowd home happy.
I think that's a safe bet, but we'll
you think so? Yeah.
Yeah. I think you might be onto something there. But you never know. They might throw a curveball in a dark match. How about before the show went on the air? Was there a dark match or two to warm up the crowd?
Yes. It was Ty Dillinger and Zack Ryder versus Mike Kanellis and Mojo Rawley. And Ryder and Dillinger won that match. And Ty actually got a pretty good 10 champ. You know, he was the first guy out, so you know the crowd was just filing in. They were probably, you know.
Yeah, hey, I saw that guy on TV. Guy to... I get to flick my fingers and yell 10. Woo!
Yeah, that was the dark match.
I tend to hear from our correspondents. And by the way, if you attend a live event, we love getting results from live events. PW Torch at pwtorch.com. Any WWE, ROH, New Japan, any live event, indie show with any names on it, send us results. PWTorch at pwtorch.com. And we had a bunch of people do that this weekend, which is cool. And when people do that, I tend to hear Mojo didn't seem motivated. Mojo wasn't over. Mojo just went through the motions. Like, I don't hear very often that, like, he puts in these really spirited performances and maybe his spirit's a little broken from the start and stops of the pushes over the years. But did anything jump out to you in terms of how he came across to the crowd and in terms of his, I guess, engagement and effort in the match?
No, not from what I noticed. It's not like he didn't try, but the crowd just didn't really seem to react to him specifically one way or the other.
Okay. Yeah. I should ask too, what did you pay for your ticket and are you happy with what you got for the money?
Sure. Well, technically I didn't pay anything because it was an early Easter gift from my family. So that's very nice of them.
Yep.
Yeah. So I was in section 102, which is the Key Bank Club. So I was literally dead center with the ring. And I believe if I'm looking at my ticket, I believe the face value was $70. And I had a really good time tonight. I know that you like to ask what's something that you'll remember.
Yeah.
6 months from now. And I think the thing for me is that for me, it was my first time seeing some of these like guys like AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura in person. You know, I'd seen them on the pay-per-views and on the NXT specials, but this is my first time seeing a lot of these guys in person, like Bobby Roode and you know, guys like that. So, it was really cool to see AJ because I had never seen AJ Styles and Shinsuke in person.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean,
yeah.
Mike, do you have anything else that you want to ask, Joe?
Yeah, just one thing that I was kind of curious about, because for me watching SmackDown open with a very lengthy video package detailing the Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn situation, and for me, my expectation was coming out of that, okay, they're going to open the show with Daniel Bryan because that was the big news last week, Daniel Bryan coming back to wrestle, and that's the big storyline you have going on, and then I'm anticipating that and waiting for that, and then it's Bobby Roode's entrance, and they open with that tag team match with the participants in the United States Championship match. From your perspective, was there any kind of like disappointment within the crowd? Like, Daniel Bryan's going to come out. Oh, it's not Daniel Bryan. It's just this tag team match that was supposed to have one of the Singh brothers in it, and we're not really that excited about it. Or was it a situation where, you know what, it's the start of the show. We're still pumped regardless of what's coming on first.
Yeah. I was kind of expecting the same thing, that we had just gotten that big package with Bryan, and you would think that coming off his return or the news of his return last week, you would think that that's what they opened with. But no, I didn't sense that people were disappointed. They liked singing along with Roode's entrance, and as you said, the start of the show, they're ready to go. They want to, they're ready for SmackDown. So no, I didn't sense any disappointment, even if Bryan didn't open the show.
All right, cool. Well, I think that's about all I've got for you, Joe. I appreciate your time. Is there anything else in terms of crowd chants or observations from being at the building tonight that you can share, or is that about it?
Yeah, I thought this was pretty interesting. During one of the commercial breaks, and in fact, let's talk about the commercial breaks. They showed a lot of Ronda Rousey videos. That was pretty much almost every commercial break was one of the Ronda video packages. But on another one, they did that segment where they asked people to put their signs up in the crowd.
Yeah.
And one of them was a Welcome Home Corey Graves sign because, I don't know if he's from Pittsburgh. So that got a big reaction. And then they panned to someone holding a Philadelphia Flyers banner, and that got a huge, boo from the crowd. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And I didn't know if this was news to you guys or not. You can put this on the site, but they announced that Extreme Rules is coming here on July 15th. And I had heard that originally it was going to be Battleground, the Raw exclusive pay-per-view. And then when they made the announcement that the pay-per-views would be dual brand now, it's Extreme Rules. So that's July 15th here in Pittsburgh. Didn't know if you knew that or not.
Oh, okay, cool. No, that's good. That's good. Appreciate that item also. Well, Joe, I appreciate your time and glad you had a good time tonight.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Sure thing. Really appreciate it. All right, we are now back for our mailbag segment. Mike Chiari from Ring Rust Radio still with me, and we're going to now answer some emails and also just talk more about some aspects of SmackDown we did not get to earlier in the show. Vaughn from Canada says, we talked about this in the first segment. How can the announcers talk about the boost to your career winning the Andre Battle Royal without laughing out loud? What has it done for anyone? Nothing. It's a joke, but I guess they need to pretend it means something. Okay, so that's his rant. But he says, do you think Shane actually makes it to WrestleMania? A lot of emails asking that. And lastly, out of the 34 WrestleManias, how many have not had a McMahon wrestling in it? I bet it would be a surprising statistic to find out. Anyway, thanks for the great shows. I read that in part because I just, a number of people, I think were probably thinking what we were thinking, listening to them talking about the importance of the Andre Battle Royal and what it can do to a career. I do want to say, though, even if it sounds silly to us, I think it's good to make it seem like it matters. I mean, I think that's within the realm of reasonable hype to say that, you know, this can be a boost, that it is prestigious, because you want to at least pay some lip service to the match mattering. But my challenge is make it matter. Like, they have control of that. The push of Mojo has been, like, disappointing. I mean, I know he just is not over at house shows, and his matches at house shows don't show great effort. And, I mean, they probably have the reasons for wanting to push him and then cooling off on him time after time. But sometimes, you know, you got to think about what you're protecting. And they should be protecting the prestige of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal by having the winner be someone that they're sure that they can push. And I think they had other reasons. You know, they have their reasons each year for doing it. And Gronk was probably a motivation for Mojo. But yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable to say that the winner can gain momentum. It's just now let's start putting your money where your mouth is in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't fault them at all for pretending that it has the potential to launch somebody, because if you don't do that, then you're just saying this match doesn't matter, and you're not doing yourself a service at all if you do that. I think that, like I said before, I think they've had every intention of using it as a launching pad for guys that have won it. The last 2 years, I think it's just been maybe you picked the wrong guy. I think they had big plans potentially for Baron Corbin. I mean, he won Money in the Bank, but maybe they, you know, ultimately won Money in the Bank, but maybe they cooled on him a little bit. Mojo Rawley, I think that it was maybe a questionable choice. A guy like Cesaro, I think they inexplicably kept him heel after he won and he got that huge reaction. So there's been a lot of missteps. There's been a lot of mistakes with regard to that. But I think that they do intend to push the winner of the Battle Royal. They just have to follow through with it this time if they're actually serious about it.
Yeah, yep, I agree. Do you think Shane wrestles? I mean, we're speaking from not enough information. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it really is a hunch. What's your gut tell you? No pun intended. That was probably totally inappropriate and tasteless, but it was not intended. What hunch do you have? I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, just 100% a guess. But I think the fact that they even mentioned it as a possibility tonight and even went so far as to make it official, I guess nothing's officially official until it happens. That tells me that they apparently have hope or belief that he can do it. And again, I think that, you know, a normal person, I would not say that they would be able to make it. Even a normal wrestler, I don't know if they would be able to make it. But Shane McMahon is definitely a rare breed, and he's willing to do anything and everything. So I think that if anybody can do it, he's the person that can do it.
If he can survive a helicopter crash, he can survive an intestinal bulge, a massive infection that takes heavy antibiotics, and a hernia. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is because it's not an actual, like, MMA fight, he could be part of the match, but they would mask what he does. He doesn't you know, he doesn't wear wrestling trunks. He can be in the track suit, and he can throw some terrible punches and you know, be limited in what he does, but still be part of it.
He could be taken out before the match and Daniel Bryan wrestles a handicap match, potentially. I could see something like that happening. So he's still kind of part of it, but not necessarily in the match.
Yes. The Evil Ken on Twitter says, with the latest stip in the Daniel Bryan Shane McMahon tag match, you don't think Vince McMahon is ridiculous enough to try to turn Daniel Bryan, do you? Why am I even asking that? And Michael McGivern on Twitter says, I think KO and Sammy win, or Bryan turns on Shane and aligns with the others. Either way, it keeps Bryan nice and marginalized. and then Mike Chiari says on Twitter, oh wait, that's you. I don't need to do that. You're on, you're on my feed with your speculation. I think Bryan wins and KO and Sammy just go to Raw.
I don't think it's anything so dastardly. I just think that, you know, they said if Sammy and KO lose, they are fired from SmackDown. So, you know, you have a superstar shakeup. I think Daniel Bryan wins and you have the feel-good moment, and Sammy and KO just go to Raw.
What did you make of Daniel Bryan's demeanor on the stage? Because he was really excited last week, and he looked ghostly white, very just, I'm not even quite sure how to describe his mood, just solemn. And I know he got fired up at the end, and that was good, but I was thinking, God, is Shane, like, did they just get word that Shane's on, like, life support or something? Like, it was just, he was so, like, just, it was so, I'm glad he turned it up in the last couple minutes, you know, last minute or so. But I was almost like he was just informed, yeah, you're going to be going heel in the match, because the last thing we need is fans chanting for Daniel Bryan during the Roman Reigns Brock match later. Is there a chance that they actually do try to turn Daniel Bryan heel with KO and Sammy, and ultimately this does turn out to be Daniel Bryan turning heel on Shane McMahon, and they play this for sympathy in the sense that, you know, they've publicized the Shane thing. It's possible, because it's a private medical situation, and we only know what WWE.com told us, that they've actually exaggerated what's going on with Shane in order to create even more sympathy for him when he walks out. The crowd's like, wow, he's got guts. He's a McMahon. And then Daniel Bryan turns on him, and that is a way where they think they need to go that far in order to make sure that fans boo Bryan and cheer Shane, because Shane gutted it out. Oh, there I went again. And and Bryan turned on him and aligned with Sammy and KO. I mean, I wouldn't rule that out, because I think if they don't turn Daniel Bryan, I think there's a very good chance. And by the way, it's a bad idea to turn him. But if they don't turn him, I think there's a really good chance fans are chanting Daniel Bryan during the Lesnar-Reigns match later in the card.
I did think that the promo was a little bit bizarre, and I think that after the high of last week, and where I thought he cut a fantastic promo and was an emotional, raw promo, and it felt like it was 100% from the heart, I felt like this promo felt more contrived, because, again, it is about a storyline that isn't reality. Not so much as, you know, it was last week, where he's just talking about the struggle it was to get back to this, and you know, how he's so happy and grateful to be back, cleared to wrestle. This week it was more like, let me pretend like these guys who are actually my friends in real life, like, tried to take this away from me. I understand that that's part of wrestling and you have to sell it, but I just think that, yeah, it was a little strange, the tenor of the promo. I thought I just think it didn't resonate as much with me. I didn't think it was, like, the greatest or most effective way to announce that match. I just kind of felt like they told him, you know, go out there and say this is going to be a match, and there you go, and, you know, figure it out. And it didn't come across with really the proper tone for me. I agree that he did get better near the end, where he did turn it up and he did get mad, but I think that should have been it from the start, where he was angry because these guys tried to destroy his career after he just came back, and just go with that throughout. So I did think it was a little bit strange, but again, you know, he's just back, so maybe he's working his way back into it. But in terms of a heel turn for Daniel Bryan, I can't see it personally, because I think that people are just going to be so behind him that he could go and kick some babies in the stands and they would still chant for Daniel Bryan and cheer for Daniel Bryan. And I don't think that turning on Shane McMahon would make them cheer Daniel Bryan any less necessarily. I think that, you know, whether he turns heel or stays face or wins or loses, I think there probably is the same chance of Daniel Bryan chance in the main event. So I really don't think that there's anything that they could do with him to change that. I just feel like this is his first match back. This is what so many fans have been wanting. I think he just goes over, and I think you get the feel good moment, and I think you move forward with him from there. And I just think that nobody's going to buy into Daniel Bryan as a heel after based on the story, the real life story that it took for him to get to this point.
No, I agree. I could imagine Vince thinking he needs to do that to stop at Daniel Bryan Chance, but I think it actually might lead to a more defiant fan base, because I think the WrestleMania crowd especially would be savvy enough to say, you think that's going to get us to boo Daniel Bryan? This is just giving us more permission to cheer Sammy and KO and Daniel Bryan. And Shane is popular, but I think he's, you know, the bloom is off his rose a little bit as a novelty. And it could end up seeming heavy-handed if he comes out and it just seems like, you know, oh my God, Shane, he's shown such guts, and they lay it on so thick that it leads to some backlash. Although the fans in the building wouldn't be subject to the announcing telling that story. So we'll see. I think Daniel Bryan tonight, and the reason that segment felt kind of flat and awkward is I assume Shane McMahon was going to cut the promo that Daniel Bryan did announcing the stips. And I bet they had for months, you know, like this idea in mind. Okay, if we go this way and if Bryan gets cleared and we do this, here's what Shane will say. And they just had to kind of, after all that time building up to it, because of Shane's situation, they had to Bryan had to announce the match and had this, you know, lame statement, you know, well, it's a land of opportunity, so I'm going to give them a second chance. And the reason I'm giving them a second chance is, you know, I do have a history with them and all of that. Well, it's like, I don't really buy that, like, giving them a second chance argument when you get announced as making your return to wrestling after a couple years off, and they attack you and powerbomb you on the ring apron, and you're stretchered out in a neck brace and a back brace, and they run this really heavy angle, and then he's going to reward them with an opportunity to wrestle at WrestleMania, something poor John Cena is desperate to make happen, and you're just going to reward them with that? Like, to me, it really was an unfortunate turn, and I think Bryan's demeanor was meant to be selling the effects of the beating last week, but it came across as that he had this broken spirit and was upset about something, and it's unfortunate. I know the Shane thing, you know, you can't blame WWE too much because the Shane situation likely threw a wrench into the storyline, but I thought the Daniel Bryan's explanation made very little sense. And I can't imagine, you know, when people saying, well, Daniel turn on KO and Sammy, I can't imagine. It's not like KO and how could Daniel Bryan possibly turn heel against Shane in favor of KO and Sammy after what they did to him last week? Like, right. That was too big of a beatdown. They needed to not do the angle last week. If there was even a sliver of a chance that was going to happen. So if they do it, I think it's awful booking, and therefore I can't rule it out, but I don't think it will. Yeah,
just to your point quickly about, you know, him, the way he started the promo, I think that the mistake that was made was him talking about his history with these guys and almost showing sympathy for that fact, where what he should have done is come out and said, I'm going to give them another chance. Not, I've lost all respect for them because of what they did to me. I'm giving them another chance because I want to make them pay at WrestleMania for what they did to me.
Exactly.
And that's all it had to be.
And it does seem like the obviously better route. Right. Is to have Daniel Bryan walk out there and in a neck brace and tear off the neck brace and say, those two tried to stop me. It's one of the greatest days of my life, and they almost ruined it. Mm-hmm. And I fired them, and then they beat me up, and I'm not going to let them get off that easy. Tear off the neck brace. I'm going to be at WrestleMania, and so are they, and they're going to pay. And I know Shane McMahon will be on my side. He's going to be my partner if he's medically cleared, and I think he will. But you know what? I mean, just, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Give us
100%.
Fired up promo from the beginning, much better. So, yeah, this was a bump in what has been a bumpy road as far as this whole storyline goes. But I thought a very important week and not a passing grade for the choice that they made in what Bryan should say. And, again, I give them some wiggle room because of the audible throwing their way with Shane. But they should have done a better job having to rewrite things. All right, Mike from Montreal will stay in Canada. He says, Wade, I think I understand the Bludgeon Brothers. The funny costumes, the fake spongy mallets. They're cosplayers. It has to be, right? In all honesty, they have to get rid of those mallets. Those things were flying around like foam hands tonight on SmackDown. Thanks for all the great content, Wade. Take care. Mike, they're just too polished for whatever they are. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we don't know what they are. They are cartoon characters. They're not real people. KO and Sami Zayn, real people. Daniel Bryan, real person. AJ Styles, real person. Even Jinder Mahal, Randy Orton, they seem like real people. Natalya, Charlotte, Becky, real people. And then the Bludgeon Brothers, they're like from this other world, and it's too corporate, too polished, too clean cut. They remind me of what the Road Warriors became when they were the Legion of Doom in the WWF. All of a sudden, those intimidating shoulder pads look like gimmicky toys that they bought off, you know, extra large size off at the merchandise stand. And those mallets, it looks like a prop, and the idea that the Usos and New Day are scared of them, it just takes you out of the moment. I like Harper and Rowan getting a push and getting remade, but these gimmicks are just too corporate.
I think they're fantastic as a team, and I think they have been for a long time, and I think that for me, I think gimmicks can still work in wrestling in certain situations. I mean, people still love The Undertaker. But I think that the thing that you have to do when you have a gimmick like this especially is you have to really sell it to people. Like, when you have a gimmick like a Bray Wyatt, and, you know, you can say whatever you want about Bray Wyatt and whether or not he's been booked properly. Yeah. Obviously he hasn't. But they sell out to that type of gimmick. And that's what you have to do with the Bludgeon Brothers. And I think that when you're doing the vignettes prior to them coming back and being the Bludgeon Brothers, you know, you weren't necessarily getting an explanation to what they were, but you had these on-site things. They were in the woods, and they're doing things where at least you're like, okay, I can buy into this gimmick. You know, I know I'm watching a television show. I know this isn't quote-unquote real, and I know that these are characters, but they're selling it to me. But really all they are right now is they're two huge tough guys in the ring, and they beat down everybody, and that's great. But if you want people to buy into the Bludgeon Brothers gimmick, I think that you need more of those promos, and you need more explanation to what exactly is a Bludgeon Brother and why are they a Bludgeon Brother, whatever it might be. I think that if you had explanation and you got more depth of their character, then I think that people would be able to buy into it. And I think that that can be said for almost any gimmick, no matter how ridiculous it is. You just have to explain it, and you have to have them commit to it, and then people can maybe buy it.
Sure. Yep. That makes sense. All right. Up next, we got Andrew G, who says, contrary to Shane McMahon's opinion, more wrestlers do not make a match more exciting. But does Rusev's addition to the U.S. title match make it more appealing? Rusev will probably be the unanimous babyface, at least in the eyes of the fans, and having a fourth man might help keep it from feeling like a derivative triple threat for Raw's mid-card title, or SmackDown's mid-card title, I guess he means. Do you think, we didn't really talk about whether it makes the match better to have Rusev in it? I think Rude is a pretty cold character once you get past fans going glorious. And Orton is over, but he's not super exciting. He seems a little more engaged this year than he had last year so far in what he's doing. But yeah, you don't really sense this is like a big career moment for him. And then Jinder's Jinder. You know, I mean, so adding Rusev to the mix and a little tension between Rusev and Jinder, I think actually does take a match that to me felt a little cold, and it does make it more interesting, I dare say. And I think once you have a three-way, I don't think it's like this big drop-off then to go to four-way. I'm a fan of one-on-one matches, and I think that should be the default, and they do multi-man matches too often. But I don't really think, I think actually a four-way is better than a three-way in the sense that you can have wrestlers paired off fighting each other as opposed to either the two-on-one or a wrestler taking a break on the outside.
I think 1,000,000% it adds to the match to have Rusev as part of it. Again, like for me, just like from a fan perspective, among the matches that have been announced, that triple threat before Rusev getting added, that was easily the one match that I was kind of like, I don't really care too much about this match, because, you know, I like Bobby Roode. I think he's an excellent talent. You know, I like Randy Orton. Jinder Mahal, you know, kind of is what he is. Not a huge fan personally, but, you know, it just didn't do anything for me. Rusev, at least you have the situation now where, if nothing else, I think the crowd would be heavily into that match just to chant Rusev Day. And I think that, just having an atmosphere that is positive and is reacting to the match, could do wonders for the match. Otherwise, I think it would have just kind of been going through the motions type situation, like, yeah, let's just get past this match and get on to the next one, because we've already seen Roode against Orton, which I thought was a solid match. We've already seen Orton against Mahal, which I don't think was great at all. We've seen Roode against Mahal as well. So I just think that, you know, there was nothing there to really hold the fans' attention. At least with Rusev, he's red hot in terms of, even though if he is technically a heel, red hot as a babyface, and people are loving him and people are reacting to him. So I think even if it's not a huge difference in the match quality, I think just the reactions that the match is going to get, adding Rusev was worth it just for that.
Well said. Mr. Earl Smith emails and says, am I the only one who is totally hating this build between AJ and Shinsuke? As much as I understand you don't want them to physically touch until next Sunday, you almost need something physical to salvage this build. Nakamura's lack of English and horrible creative writing has made this forgettable at best. If we get more of what we saw tonight, next Tuesday, it'd be best to just leave them off the show. Well, I think that's a little negative. well, it's okay to be negative if it's called for. I feel like that's more negative than the situation calls for. And I think that the idea of not having them engage is sort of good. I think more often it's better. We've had so much between Reigns and Lesnar, and we haven't seen anything with Rousey and Stephanie or Hunter and Triple H. And when you have a big match, and Cena and Undertaker, obviously, when you have a big match, you can end up giving too much away before the match takes place, especially a one-on-one type match. I understand when they do multi-person matches and tag matches, they tend to kind of rotate wrestlers against each other in different scenarios than the actual match at the pay-per-view. But for a one-on-one match, you can't really do that. I like it. And I actually, we talked about it at the top of the show, I liked Shinsuke having a shot at AJ and not taking it. It made it seem like, yes, he's playing mind games. He could have done it. It would have gone totally against what he said earlier to AJ, which is, I want you strong. I want to beat you at the best level that you can be at. And so to me, this seems like two honorable wrestlers. Yeah, playing some mind games and trying to play some head games. You know, and Shinsuke saying, I'm more calm and you're essentially a hothead and more emotional. And I'm approaching this match with more discipline. It works for me. And I like that Shinsuke didn't attack him. So I think a variety of approaches to a match is good. But in this case, yeah, I think people seeing Shinsuke and AJ go at it should be something that's saved for Mania.
I liked the build tonight. And I think that so often when you're leading up to WrestleMania, the default for a build is, why wait until WrestleMania? Let's fight tonight. And that's, you know, you hear that so often. And that's kind of been the case with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. But it works for Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar because that is all about physicality. Whereas I think with Shinsuke and AJ, you do need something more. And I think we got that something more tonight. I think that really what the build is they know how badly people want to see this match because people saw this match in New Japan and loved it and thought it was fantastic. And they know that people, the money in this match is waiting to see them touch and waiting to see them have the match. And if you have them fight each other and you have them get physical beforehand, then you're losing a lot in that respect. And I think that having the mind games and having the tease of being able to fight is more effective than having them fight at all, because we know that AJ can beat up Shinsuke and Shinsuke can beat up AJ. We don't have to see it happen before the actual match at WrestleMania. I think there's value in holding them away from each other.
All right, one more email. Jorge says, I know this email is a bit long, but it's my birthday this Thursday, so I hope you can make an exception. All right, Jorge, because it's your birthday. He says, and it's not that long, do you think that the Asuka-Charlotte match is getting the proper focus it deserves? With arguably the two best women in WWE, if not the world, I think there should be more airtime and more of a story to the whole title versus streak, first ever women's Royal Rumble winner versus wrestling royalty storyline. I think this match should be in the conversation as being considered a co-main event. But with the first ever women's battle royal, the Bayley Banks feud, and the Raw women's title, it's barely talked about outside of the occasional Asuka jobber squash. Both women being on separate brands doesn't do it any favors either. If there's ever a time WWE can benefit from the stupid pre-recorded promos with subtitles, they should consider Asuka cutting an emotional promo in her native language. Do you think that with about 2 weeks to go until Mania, do you think that they can salvage this match and give it the spotlight it deserves? Or do you think it will sadly get lost in the shuffle? As always, I love the work you and everyone at PW Torch does. Go VIP. Thank you, Jorge. Obviously, tonight was a curveball with Charlotte not being ready to return with her the dental surgery that she had. What'd you think of the video package they put together? Sometimes a video package can be better than actually having a promo, and when you have Asuka as limited as she is, and she did appear on Raw, maybe this was the best approach to take. Although overall, I sympathize with Jorge's position that I would have liked to by now have had a sense that this was a really big deal. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they've positioned it to be a really big deal yet. I'm hoping next week they find a way to do that, because I think going into Mania, Charlotte Asuka should feel like a co-dream match. That SmackDown should be touting that this WrestleMania And I don't want them to make the reference to their that we're going to prove we're not the B brand. Like, just stop talking about that. But I think SmackDown can market their contributions to WrestleMania as better than the Raw contributions. Or if you don't say that specifically, just really tout it. Like, we are presenting two dream matches, international dream matches. Imagine Paul Heyman, you know, touting this, that fans have been waiting and talking about this for years and years and years, and you're not getting just one, but both. The number one star in the United States who has defined the top title for SmackDown in their respective gender division, taking on a top challenger from Japan, both of whom have been impressive. This is a dream match situation. And if these were the top two match, the only top matches at WrestleMania, it would be a special WrestleMania. I mean, something along those lines. And it doesn't even seem to have crossed their mind to treat Charlotte Asuka at the same level that they're giving lip service to AJ Shinsuke. And I actually think talking about them collectively would actually mean more than trying to treat them separately. So anyway, Mike, that's my take. How do you grade them so far?
I totally agree with the premise of the email in that, you know, tonight obviously was an extenuating circumstance, and it seemed like it came in kind of late because they didn't announce that Charlotte wouldn't be able to wrestle until, you know, a few hours before the show itself. But for me, just in terms of the match that I'm most looking forward to, I think that the match build notwithstanding that I'm most looking forward to is Asuka versus Charlotte, because you have Asuka with this undefeated streak, and you have Charlotte. She's had a ton of success in WWE, two of the biggest women stars that WWE has ever had going against each other in a match that has never happened on any level at any time. I think, and it has the potential to be maybe the greatest women's match in the history of WrestleMania. And I think that alone has me excited for this match, but I don't think WWE's done me or anyone else or itself any favors in terms of, you know, increasing the excitement for it, because aside from it was either last week or the week before, you had the in-ring promo with Charlotte and with Asuka on SmackDown talking about, you know, why they're doing this. Asuka saying that, you know, to be the best, I have to beat the best. And that all worked for me, and I thought that was really good. But aside from that, you haven't had much, and I think that WWE's kind of shot itself in the foot a little bit by just almost confining Asuka to Raw. Like, I understand that she is a Raw superstar, but she made the decision to go after the SmackDown championship. So because of that, she should probably be treated as a SmackDown superstar during the build toward WrestleMania, especially because the person that she's facing is on SmackDown. So even if you want her to pull double duty, that's fine. But if not, I think she should be on SmackDown more than she's on Raw, because instead of facing Alexa Bliss and facing Mickie James and doing things with Nia Jax and people that she has nothing to do with at WrestleMania, she should be focused on Charlotte and interacting with Charlotte and talking about Charlotte, and that just hasn't happened enough. I do agree that, especially when it comes to superstars who are from other countries and aren't necessarily going to have the greatest promo chops, a video package can be a very good and a very effective way of building things. I don't necessarily know that the one that we saw did a whole lot, though, especially compared to what they did when they talked in the ring, which was the one, I think, really good segment of this feud so far. I do think that it feels like it's not necessarily important. I do feel like it's lagging behind almost all of the other top feuds, and I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, because, like I said, it is really a dream match, and it is a match that we haven't seen, and it has the potential to steal the show at WrestleMania, and I think there should be more emphasis on it.
Well, on that note, Mike, of hope and positivity, let's wrap up the show. Always great to have you on the program. Give one more quick mention to how people can find out more about seeing your event at WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Saturday, April 7th, 2 to 4 p.m. local time, Hilton Garden Inn, New Orleans Convention Center, the Ring Rust Radio live show. If anybody's interested in attending, you can contact us, ringrustradio@yahoo.com. You can find us at Ring Rust Radio on Twitter. It's $10 a ticket. Just let us know that you're interested, and we'll tell you how you can get tickets to see that.
Mike, thanks. A pleasure as always. We'll hopefully talk to you again in a matter of weeks.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Wade.
You bet. So if you have not yet, be sure to subscribe to our Blue Brand, our Podcast One shows. Coming up later this week, our flagship on Thursday. This week features Todd Martin. We're going to talk some New Japan along with WWE and other topics. And then Friday, it's part three with Sam Roberts talking about which matches should have finished WrestleMania the last half dozen years. And we'll also talk about this year's prospects for which matches are worthy of ending WrestleMania and which ones are likely based on Vince McMahon's history and the way we look at, or the way he looks at things, what are most likely to be the top candidates to close the show this year. So just search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on iOS or Android, and subscribe to our Blue Brand at Podcast One for the final two shows of this week. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Don't forget, if you attend a live event, please send results to PWTorch at PWTorch.com. If you have questions for the flagship, send them to Wade Keller Podcast at PWTorch.com. If you want to be an on-site correspondent on the podcast, who we call and talk to about your experience at Raw or SmackDown anytime coming up, just email Wade Keller Podcast at PWTorch.com. For written recaps of popular pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts, check out our sister site, PWPodcasts.com. For news, results, and editorials on the world of mixed martial arts, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com. And most of all, be sure to check out PWTorch.com every day to read my news reports, my TV reports, and a lot of opinions from a lot of our contributors, along with flashback articles from 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, including my full detailed reports on Raw and SmackDown from past eras. New flashbacks for house shows. Just about every weekend, we put up house show reports from 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's cool to go back and look at where wrestlers stood at different times who are currently on the roster, or just look back at another time, another era of house shows. If you like doing that, by the way, the best thing to do is to become a VIP member, because then you gain access to over 30 years of back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, over 1,500 back issues available the second you go VIP. For details on that and everything else that comes with VIP membership, go to pwtorch.com/goVIP. Thanks so much, everybody. Follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. Like me on Facebook, like our brand at Facebook at facebook.com/PW Torch. And friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/Wade Keller Torch. That does it for me for today. We're halfway through the week for The Wade Keller Shows. And up next, it's The Flagship with Todd Martin.